time has come. Let's begin with a word of prayer. Father, once again, we thank you for your goodness to us. Thank you for keeping us through the past week. Thank you for the things that you have enabled us to do. Now, as we meet together to consider what your word teaches about who and what we are, we ask that you would enable us to think clearly, consider how your word applies to us, make this time to be helpful to us and equipping us to serve you in faith and faithfully as we look to Jesus, in whose name we pray. Amen. So, if you were not here last week, raise your hand so you can collect a handout. Hands up. Anybody else over here? Yep. Come on. Once, twice, thrice. There you go. All right. Now, so to quickly recap, where we are looking at the question, who am I? Or if you like, what am I? We're doing that because we're considering the question, so what's your problem? What's my problem? What's everybody's problem? Simple answer to that is sin. But we look at that as the emphasis there is sort of on my sin, although we did talk about sin is a problem also when you talk about the sin of others against us, or when you talk about the sin of this present evil age, that is, the consequences of the fall, the effects of Adam's sin, in other words. But to focus on the question of my problem being sin, we want to ask, so who am I? Who's the my in that? So looking at that, we said there are several things we can say. First of all, I'm a creature, and we looked at Adam at creation, and we looked at Westminster Confession of Faith, Chapter 4, Section 2, and the Larger Catechism, Question 17, and we finished that off by summing up, saying that Adam at creation, he's a material being, right? Got a body. That's part of what it is to be man. Okay. Unlike some of the Eastern religions and so on, we don't look forward to the time when we don't have a body. Okay. We are material beings, but we're also spiritual beings. Which is to say non-material, but also it is to say we have a spirit, right? And so we can talk about the heart, we can talk about the soul, we can talk about the mind in the sense of the intellect, the understanding, and so on, or attitude, perception, that kind of thing, how we process things mentally. And the mind as over against the brain, which of course is physical, right? The thought life of a non-material man, or man spiritually speaking. So man is material being, spiritual being, is also a moral being, made in the image of God, as a moral being, distinguished from the animals. We also said that man is a social being. We're made to be in relationship, and he's a working being, that is to say, labor. Right? It's part of what we are. Think about the cultural mandate in Genesis 2. So man is a creature. But also, we said man is a sinner. And so we looked at Westminster Confession of the Faith, chapter 6, and sections 1 through 6. In that, we note that our first parents were seduced by the serpent, and then they sinned, and that God permitted that. And as a consequence of that, Adam and the whole human race with him fell from original righteousness and communion with God. And with that, then, became dead in sin, and just dropped dead immediately. But immediately, he's dead in sin. That's it. Things are changed, right? It's a whole new ballgame now for Adam, right? And so dead in sin, and wholly defiled, completely defiled, in all the parts and faculties of soul and body, to use the language of the confession. And to say wholly defiled doesn't mean that man is as bad as he could be, right? Because we're not. But it means that everything about us is affected by sin. So we're never as good as we should be. That's what it means to be a sinner. Then we talked about the imputation, that is the reckoning of the guilt of Adam's sin to all of his posterity, that's us, and the conveyance of death in sin and the corrupted nature. So because Adam sinned, we are A, guilty of his sin, but also, we died, and we're dead in sin, okay? So, you know, you got all these people that, you know, the walking dead. Different thing, right? But think about that, okay? A corrupted nature, right? So as sinners, nature is corrupt. Thanks to Adam. I'm fond of saying, well, thank God. People complain like, oh, thank God. Okay, you can pardon that. We noted that from that original corruption, what we might refer to as original sin, whereby we are indisposed, disabled, and made opposite to all good. It doesn't mean you can't do anything, but it means good. Okay. And wholly inclined to all evil. All right. From that corruption proceed all actual transgressions. That is to say, the transgressions which we act are actual sin. Doesn't just mean real. It means it's our acts. Well, things we do, which include thinking, so on. Then that corruption remains in the regenerate. Right? So there's still corruption there. Okay? Though we're pardoned, forgiven, and mortified, that is to say, put to death. That sin is put to death through Christ. That the corruption and its motions are truly and properly sin. So that's there. It's as though it clings to us. It's still there. Okay. And then every sin, original and actual, being a transgression of the righteous law of God, in its own nature brings guilt upon the sinner, whereby he is bound over to the wrath of God, curse of the law, and so made subject to death, with all miseries, spiritual, temporal, and eternal. Which is to say, all right, you're not just guilty of Adam's sin, that's bad enough, but your own sin, right? In other words, we do it, and we still do it. Right? I'm reasonably sure that everybody in this room has sinned already this morning. You might not know what it was, but yeah, right? Because you've been awake, you've been doing stuff. I didn't catch that.
I said we're trying not to think about it.
Yeah, okay. Very good. Let me see. While I am thinking about this, too loud?
Yeah.
Too loud?
That's powerful.
Too loud?
Just right there.
Right there. Okay. All right. I should have done that before. So that brings us up to where we were. So for the sake of those who weren't here, or for the sake of those who needed a refresher, I think we left off with, do you have questions? Now, there are miles to go before we sleep. So, but questions left over from last week, going once, twice, all right, we're moving on. So next we want to look at and talk about our sin and misery. And we look at the Large Catechism, questions 23 through 28, and you should have there on your handout some references, right? You got that. So you have the Shorter Catechism, questions 17 to 19 as well. We're not picking on those at the moment. So, Large Catechism, question 23, into what estate did the fall, which we've just been talking about, into what estate did the fall bring mankind? The fall brought mankind into an estate of sin and misery. Now, we've just been talking about the sin. But okay, misery, misery. What is sin? Sin is any want of conformity unto or transgression of any law of God given as a rule to the reasonable creature. If you want, this is a side note. If you think about that definition of sin, which is, let's say, a classic definition of sin, all right? Does your dog, your cat, your pet iguana, whatever, sin?
No, but they're bad at times.
Johnny says, for those who didn't hear, Johnny said, no, but they're bad at times. So clearly no is correct. They are affected by the fall, right? So they deal with the effects of the fall, including sinful masters who give them confusing commands or put them in situations that they can handle. And, all right? They do what's natural to them. right? I mean, you leave that steak on the table, the leftovers, and you walk away from the room, and you find the dog on top of the table consuming. I've had that experience. Right? Don't blame the dog. Right? So, anyway. So, wherein consists, if you will, the sinfulness of that estate, that condition, into which man fell? The sinfulness of that estate, wherein to man fell, consists in the guilt of Adam's first sin, the want of that righteousness wherein he was created, right? Original righteousness, and the corruption of his nature, whereby he is utterly indisposed, disabled, and made opposite unto all that is spiritually good, and wholly inclined to all evil, and that continually, which is commonly called original sin, and from which do proceed all actual transgressions. Okay? Now, for those of you that are aware that there are discussions, about does man have a free will? Right? So, man is free to obey, to follow his nature. But if your nature is corrupt, if your nature is wholly inclined to evil, right, you're not free from that. Hence, you're not free to do good. Okay? Just, again, a side note. All right? I'll leave it there for the moment. So, utterly indisposed, disabled, and made opposite unto all that is spiritually good, and wholly inclined to all evil, and that continually, which is commonly called original sin, and from which do proceed all actual transgressions. How is original sin conveyed from our first parents unto their posterity? Original sin is conveyed from our first parents unto their posterity by natural generation, right? Being born. And so as all that proceed from them in that way are conceived and born in sin. Now, natural generation is important here, right? Why?
Jesus.
Because of Jesus, that's right, who was not born by natural generation, right? Holy Spirit, not man. Distinguished then from the rest of us in that respect. Then what misery did the fall bring upon mankind? The fall brought upon mankind the loss of communion with God, chief importance, his displeasure and curse. So as we are by nature children of wrath, bond slaves to Satan, and justly liable to all punishments in this world and that which is to come. All the bad stuff that happens is we're justly liable to all of that, as well as not only in this world, but the world to come, right? In other words, hell. And then what are the punishments of sin in this world? The punishments of sin in this world are either inward, as blindness of mind, a reprobate sense, strong delusions, hardness of heart, horror of conscience, and vile affections, or outward, as the curse of God upon the creatures for our sakes,
and all other evils that befall us in our bodies, names, estates, relations, and employments, together with death itself. Right? I think I've said here before, so some of you have heard this, but death is not good. For the Christian, it's overcome, but it's not good. Right? Consequence of the fall, consequence of the curse. And all of the things that befall us in our bodies, our names, our reputations, our estates, our conditions, the things that you own, that you would like to own, that sort of thing, your relations, your relationships, right? Anybody? No, I'm not going to ask that question. The conflicts that you have with people, minor ones, major ones, right? All of that, your employments. What are things like on the job? Where you work? What are the things about that? Right, the best job has something about it that you wish you didn't have to do or put up with. Right, and so on. So, sin and misery. Questions before we move on, because we're going to make kind of a major transition, or comments. Anybody? Yes, Adam.
Just thinking about that question number 25. Sin is easy. Good is hard.
Say it again.
Sin is easy. It's default. It's laziness. It comes natural. Good and doing good is difficult and it takes effort and takes premeditation and takes a lot of things that are hard.
Yeah.
So it's just by default, we're lazy and sinful and wrongdoers,
Yep. Yep. That's the default setting. That's right. So, again, so that anybody that didn't hear, Adam's point is sin's easy, good is hard. It's difficult.
Rick. I think you need to take the point further and say that everyone else says good is impossible. That is to say, good is impossible without God. That without God intervening to overcome our nature, it's impossible for us to do any good.
Right. So, as sinners, that's exactly right. Of course, in the regenerate, mm-hmm. although we still have the corruption, right? We also, as you put it, have God. So, right? So what we do, we'll get there in a moment, but it's still affected by sin. Everything is still affected by sin. But we also do good, at least in some sense. So, I saw another hand. Yeah.
I think that good just comes out of a good relationship with God. When you do something good, sometimes you don't even try to do something good, and you can do something good, but it comes from something that God does through you. And so the only way to do that is to have a close relationship with God, and if you do that, then I don't think that good is hard in that perspective. If you look at it that way, it's not hard to do if God does it through you. You can't do it on your own.
Well, and as much as God is doing it, it's pretty hard. Yeah, right.
So it's just you have to make sure that
you are. Yeah, Philippians 2, right? It is God who works in you to will and to do according to his good pleasure. So, that's right. The Spirit works, and we do things sometimes without even realizing it. So, yeah. And of course, it's also true that God uses those who do not belong to him, right? But it's not the same thing. They're not. They're not pleasing God by what they do. The wicked, right? So, the Babylonians, Nebuchadnezzar, for example. But he doesn't get points for that. Right? And when you say a relationship with God, everybody on the planet has a relationship with God. What you need is a good relationship with God. Right? There are children of wrath. That's a relationship with God. Right? So, I understand, generally speaking, when people talk about having a relationship with God, what they really mean is having a right relationship with God, a good relationship with God, a relationship with God where you are his friend. He counts you as his friend, as his child. All right? But others are in a, they are related to God in a not good way. All right? So, you know, which is to say that nobody is out there just sort of neutral, hanging out, waiting to find out what's going to, you know, what are the, well, shall I or shall I not? I don't know. Only my hairdresser knows for sure. You know? Fair point, right? All right, anybody else? Doug.
If we look at it through God's eyes.
Say it again.
If we look at it through God's eyes, none of us are good. I mean, we can see non-believers do good things. And we look at them and say, wow, they're doing this, they're doing charity work, they're helping people. But in God's eyes, they're still not good. Let's look at it through his eyes.
Yeah, so... for... again, for the unregenerate, that's true, period. For the regenerate, well, yes and no. Because God is pleased to accept our good works, even though mixed with weakness and imperfection, right? In other words, affected by sin, okay? Even so, he's pleased to accept being made perfect for the sake of Christ. Right? We don't make him perfect. Right? But so, if you belong to Jesus, God looks upon you and your efforts to do what is good and right and faithful. And he says, well done, my good and faithful servant. That's how God sees you. I think it's important to keep that in mind. Right? I mean, we're here still in the midst of talking about man as sinner. Okay. So, yeah, that's not good. That doesn't look good. No way, right? And it affects everything, okay? But the next section, when we get there, is man, is we are redeemed, right? So there's this tension, if you will, so that on the one hand, you know, what Doug is saying is exactly right. What we do, inasmuch as it is just us, it never cuts the mustard, right? So we're thankful for what we would think of as good things that people do, regenerate, unregenerate, right? When you get... when you're drowning and somebody jumps in to the water and pulls you out, you don't say, wait a minute, are you regenerate? I'm not sure if I want you to pull me out of the water. I don't think this is good. Right? We don't ask that question. No, we're thankful, okay? I had that experience once. Not asking if they were regenerate. So we're thankful. However, if they're not regenerate, then even that good work is still sinful because it won't have been done either in the right way or from the right motive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Confession talks about that. So, Johnny.
Yeah, and just thinking for that, it's, you know, we all need a big dose of humility, so we don't go impugning the good works of others. We don't know their motives or anything, and we also don't take pride in our own good works either. So we can be thankful for a Dr. Ben Carson who invents a brain surgery, but some Nazi guy invented some sort of thing, but it's useful. I mean, it's good in medically, and
yeah,
we're thankful for the good things even that evil, bad people made.
Right.
Because we have a dose of humility to take except for the grace of God, there go I, type of thing. Because I thought that Nazi temple was not a good one. I should have said.
I got all kinds of things in my head at that point, yeah.
You know what I mean, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, wicked people.
Good surgery, it doesn't matter who the surgeon is.
Right, right. And it's also true, though, that wicked people do wicked things from which good things come in God's good providence. So, you know, will the Nazis fit in there somewhere? Okay. Anybody else? Patty.
As a Christian, like, when you get up in the morning, I don't think about, oh, I'm going to go do good works. I don't think that way. I figure, like, I got enough trouble trying to figure out how to read my Bible and pray, and if you do that, then, you know, you don't think about, oh, this is good work or whatever. It's hard,
yeah,
trying to keep up your relationship and try to be on speaking terms that day with your Lord. You,
yeah,
make sure that you remember to talk to him. Whatever.
Yeah, that's right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, thinking about humility, and we're talking about how a wicked person can do good. We also have to think about the fact that we are sinners and we are contributing to the pile of sin in the world.
Mm.
We are contributors to that. So while we're complaining about the world, we are complaining about ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know,
it reminds me of G.K. Chesterton when he entered the essay, What is Wrong with the World? And his essay was two words, I am.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know he's a non-Calvinist and everything, but I still love him.
Yeah. Yeah, great answer, right? Yeah, it's intriguing. It seems to me when we're complaining, we're not only complaining about ourselves, which is true, we're also complaining against God. Right? People think as though complaining was something that they have a right to do. Let me get it off my chest. And the Apostle Paul says, do all things without complaining or grumbling. Right? The word that gets translated grumbling, the Greek word is gongudzomai. It's one of those words. It sounds like what it means, going go go on the body. Right? It's onomatopoetic. Okay, thank you, John. So, complaining is sin. People complain professionally. It's sin. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm the chairman of the General Assembly's Committee on Appeals and Complaints. you can certainly say, look, something is wrong. Right? I don't think that's what the Apostle Paul is talking about. Can you address something that's wrong? Right? Yeah, okay. But the way we usually use the word complaining, that's exactly what the Apostle Paul is talking about, right? And not to sound like Bob Newhart, but stop it. If you're not familiar with a Bob Newhart routine, Google Bob Newhart, stop it. 6.5 minutes, you know, it's worth watching. Anyway, so anybody else? Tim?
Just real quick, John, and me. When we're talking about good works, sometimes we tend to think of specific things, but I think about the passage where Jesus proclaims himself as the bread of life, and the crowd's asking, you know, what can we do the works of God? And he said, believe on the one whom he has sent. So that colors our whole life, whether we eat, drink, sleep, whatever we're doing. It isn't that I did this specific thing or that specific thing. Every breath, every thought, everything becomes a work. It's either worship or not. So, yeah, that's all colored by we believe. You know, I get up in the morning because my life has purpose. Well, why does it have purpose? Because God gives it purpose. That's why. You know, so sometimes what we consider to be a work, it is, but there's a whole lot more to it than that. That's one argument I took up with the Arminian one time. You know, what does the unbeliever do by faith? Nothing. Nothing by faith. See, although the physical acts may produce good things, they don't bring glory to God, so they're not good in that sense. So we, that's enough.
Yeah. You know, when Tim's talking about you get up in the morning and, what's my purpose, and God gives you a purpose. You brought me back to Patty's comment. You don't get up in the morning thinking, well, let's see, what good works shall I do today? That's true, right? I mean, in our normal, everyday, ongoing life, you're not thinking about what are my good works today. You're not even thinking, probably, about what's my purpose in life or what's my purpose today, okay? But you might be thinking, what do I have to do today? You might be thinking, oh, do I have to go to work today? Do I have to mow the lawn today? Do I have to fill in the blank, okay? Why? Why does this have to happen to me? We're now into complaining again. Okay, and there are answers to those questions, right? So occasionally, those kinds of things do occur to us, usually because there's something else going on that will cause some kind of distress, which is why we're talking about this stuff now, right? To arm you against those times when those questions arise, right? Okay, so I'm going to move on. I'm going to press on. We got about 6 minutes max. And I want to see if I can finish this section. Perhaps at some time in the future, we will finish the outline that you have in front of you. Maybe soon, maybe not. We'll see, okay? We'll see what the Lord provides. But just know that there's more that could come. So with that in mind, though, the next things that you have there on your outline or on your handout are really a setup for what's coming, but also to make a point now. So we're switching for the moment to talk about Christ, okay? We're still in this section. We're sinners, okay? Well, for the moment, we're talking about Christ. So, Westminster Shorter Catechism, question 23. What offices does Christ execute as our Redeemer? Christ as our Redeemer executes, as our Redeemer, executes the offices of a prophet, of a priest, and of a king. Both in his estate of humiliation and exaltation. All right? Humiliation, his earthly ministry, basically, right? Birth, earthly ministry, death, and suffering, and his exaltation, right? Raised from the dead, sits at the right hand of God the Father, rules, governs, defends us against all his enemies and ours. Okay? Exaltation. So, prophet, priest, and king. You've heard these terms before, all right? But keep them in mind, all right? That's Christ as our Redeemer. Larger Catechism, questions 43 to 45. The offices of prophet, priest, and king executed. How does Christ execute the office of a prophet? How does he do his prophetic stuff, right? Christ executes the office of a prophet in his revealing to the church in all ages by his Spirit and Word in diverse ways of administration, the whole will of God in all things concerning their edification and salvation. How does he execute the office of a priest? Christ executes the office of a priest in his once offering himself a sacrifice without spot to God to be reconciliation for the sins of his people and in making continual intercession for them. And Christ executes the office of a king in calling out of the world a people to himself and giving them officers, laws, and censures by which he visibly governs them in bestowing saving grace upon his elect, rewarding their obedience and correcting them for their sins, preserving and supporting them under all their temptations and sufferings, restraining and overcoming all their enemies, and powerfully ordering all things for his own glory and their good, and also in taking vengeance on the rest who know not God and obey not the gospel. Now, why am I laying these things out to you now? At creation, before the fall, God gives man responsibilities, tasks, commands. Man is called, Genesis 2, we're talking about, man is called, Adam is called, to be a prophet, a priest, and a king to God, under God, in service to God, a prophet, priest, and king. Genesis 3, Adam fails in the office of prophet, priest, and king. Jesus comes to do what Adam failed to do and what we could not do. We are now to imitate Christ as prophet, priest, and kings. He makes us to be prophets, priests, and kings. The rest will follow. All right? We now have to stop. And there are people waiting to come in. Y'all come. All right.